Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 22nd of March, recording at 5:50 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. I'll start with stock markets first, and just a quick summary of where we are right now. And our view is that the stock market reaction and consolidation phase that Owen and I have been talking about really since the end of January, that process continues, and we may actually be in the second half of this corrective phase. Now, that's a guess because it's very difficult to judge. But what we do see and know is that fewer indices are pushing higher right now. And what we normally see is a slowdown of the advances, and then they gradually spill over. And that's what's been taking place. And also the ASEAN leaders, which we have commented on quite frequently. It's been a standout sector during bull phases, and this is no exception. And then they tend to hold their relative strength really well into the overall corrective phase before commencing some sharp mean reversion reactions towards their 200-day moving averages. And that's exactly what we're beginning to see now among the leaders. And I'm thinking of markets like Thailand, Indonesia, and the Philippines, which have been the top leaders overall. And the others within the sector are very much ranging. Now, having mentioned the latter phase of this reaction and consolidation, I also point out that even within bull markets, this process can be unnerving because one sees sharper setbacks, which makes investors more cautious. And these phases also embolden the bears. But I would be inclined, though, to use that as a contrary indicator overall. For instance, excuse me, you can remember how bearish so many people were back last November when this really terrific rally actually took off from a reaction low. Very bearish sentiment. Well, obviously that's very much in the background today, but a loss of upside momentum as we're now seeing, and setbacks, which will vary considerably in terms of their magnitude, but I think should remain relatively shallow and consistent with bull market pauses for the many better performing markets. And this will hold up better, but my point is here overall that this will continue to this will embolden some of the bearish sentiment overall. Now, the good news in corrective phases is that they also create buying opportunities. And there are plenty of people with cash, and indeed most of us would be happy to have another buying opportunity and not have to pay new highs for some of these impressive performing stock markets. Now, as this correction continues in its latter stages, we will continue to favor timely purchases of inform autonomies. It's been a favorite global category for equities for us for quite a while. And when I say timely purchases, that would mean near when they have pulled back and corrected short-term overbought conditions and are much closer to their still rising MAs. Those are, of course, the 200-day moving averages. And Owen will continue to highlight those for you. Now, you know that despite our strong overall preference for the autonomies, that these can lose form from time to time, so we do need to continue to monitor them on the charts overall. And again, the best of them are going to remain for the most part within their overall upward trends. Now, on a longer term basis, we think that stock markets, global stock markets, are in the latter stages of what I have long described, we both long described, as a valuation contraction cycle. That really dates back to 1999, when the last big secular bull market phase was actually ending. And valuation contraction cycles occur periodically. They last for a good few years, and the best guidance we can get overall is really to look at the last one. And that really began just in the very early stages of my financial career. I was aware that stock markets had pretty much only risen overall, and that was true during my lifetime up until we got into the mid to late latter 1960s. And then, of course, we started to get more choppy action, big bear market and 73, 74, lots of choppy action, valuations improving. Okay, some of you, some of our veteran subscribers will remember that whole period as well. But what actually happened, and I've mentioned this point before, in the latter stage of that last valuation contraction cycle, it doesn't end off a bear market low. I think we've seen the two big bear markets that we're going to get, and the same thing happened in that whole late 60s into 82 period. But the last few years, and I'm thinking now in terms of the late 1970s into 82, you get a ranging phase, which is broadly near the upper side of the big valuation contraction trading ranges. And that can continue for a few years. And there are some reasons to expect that that might ca actually be the case this time around. One of them is that valuations have become more expensive, as we've seen this terrific rally that started last November, as you know. And if it is near the latter stages of the valuation contraction cycle, I would expect global GDP growth to gradually be improving. So markets can range overall during that period, with valuations improving due to the better corporate earnings as economic activity improves overall. So I think that's what we're likely to see. It's a period, well, that's not without risks. I mean, really, I guess we can say that about any phase of stock market activity. But the biggest known risk, in my opinion, is the end of quantitative easing. Hopefully that will be a smooth transition. Some people are saying that probably with fingers crossed and high hopes. There are others who are saying that there's a risk that it really could be a fairly choppy process. We may see some of both overall, but I don't think, and I'm hopeful, that we're not going to see another massive swan dive similar to what we saw in 2008. And that really did mark, I think, in a very, very important low. A lot of people have been saying that it would be retested and even exceeded. We've disagreed throughout, as you probably know. And some people still think that's quite likely to happen. We do not. And I think the difference is partly that where they feel that might happen is that they're focusing overly on the global economies. But as equity investors, we're not buying the global economy. We're buying companies and preferably a lot of these multinational autonomies, which are doing extremely well. One obvious factor is that the economies actually take the hit in terms of rising unemployment. Well, corporations actually contribute to that from time to time, and they certainly have in this cycle, but they're not damaged by it, and they don't have to subsidize the unemployed. Actually, that environment causes or lessens wage pressure. So throughout the whole period that we've seen in recent years, it's tended to favor corporations, particularly where they've become more disciplined and run a tighter ship overall. And that's certainly what we've been seeing. Now, after this end of the valuation contraction cycle, then what happens? Well, historically, it's been followed by an extensive bull market, a super cycle bull market. And that's the last thing that you and I are going to hear from our Austrian school friends. But I think there's some good reasons why we can be a little bit more optimistic this time around. I've touched on this before, but it's worth reviewing again. The big factor, the most important of all, and an incredibly exciting factor, is the accelerated rate of technological innovation. You've heard me mention that before, and you've experienced it in your lifetime, and it's an exponential increase, and this is going to challenge even our imaginations in terms of what it's likely to achieve over the next few decades. Now, it's not all good news because technological innovation also accelerates the speed with which companies that fall behind really can suffer quite badly. So they have to adjust. Good managements will adjust in line with the technological improvements that come through. And individual households and self-employed people, small companies will also benefit from all of this technological innovation. I could bore for England on the subject, but I think it's a fascinating one, and it's one that will, well, it really probably has no natural ending cause. It will end as all trends eventually do, but it'll likely be something else, but hopefully not for really quite a long time. I'm 71, and I expect the valuation contraction cycle to continue throughout the rest of my lifetime, and I hope to live for a good many more years yet and continue with all of these audios and comments of the day on your behalf. Now, what other reasons might contribute to this super cycle bull market that I've talked to, in addition to the accelerated rate of technological innovation, which will reach all sectors, affect all sectors of the economy, of the various economies. Another factor is that, and this is a less significant one overall, but we know that the global economy's been through a torturous number of years for many countries, and I think the end of that process of readjustment will most likely lead to some more consistent recovery in the global economy. Now, that's a very debatable point, But I think it's something that we're actually likely to see, and I think we should see evidence of that, if not around the end of this year, that we will probably in 2014. So I'm by no means an alarmist in terms of what the overall global economic outlook is going to be like. Now, that begs the question: is that because I'm just a cheerful optimist, or are there some real reasons? And I think there are some real reasons, in addition to the accelerated rate of technological innovation. What we do see around the globe is the increasing acceptance and implementation of capitalistic economic systems. As a matter of fact, these are virtually totally dominant. Okay, there are a few smaller countries that are holding out against this, but not many. And when I compare this cycle with the beginning of my financial career, well, when we talked about capitalism, we were really talking about the United States, Canada, Europe, sort of, but it was with a very heavy socialistic overtone, which a little too much of which remains, in my opinion. We were talking about Australia. Well, Japan, at the beginning of my career, was just a small post-World War II recovery story, but and there really wasn't all that much else. Now, today, Asia is an economic powerhouse and likely to remain so, and it's a capitalist-driven economic powerhouse. Capitalism isn't just something that democracies have adopted. We have China's command capitalism, and other countries have that form of governance as well. But the fact that they're using a capitalist economic system rather than some Soviet economic model or early Indian economic model is a vast improvement, and these economies are clearly benefiting from this. So the difference in the size of the global middle classes, which continue to grow today, is extraordinary relative to the beginning of my career. And also relative to the beginning of the last bull market super cycle, which really started to get underway in 1982. Now, a forecast, now that's a fact. I think this increasing acceptance of capitalism, and that's spreading across Africa today. Now, a forecast of fuller monies, which we've made for several years, is that we will also see cheaper energy in real terms. And there are some very good reasons for that. The most important one, I think, overall, is the ability to tap both natural gas and also oil. That's in the various different types of shale formations. We've known about those shale formations for decades. They're vast. They exist in a great many countries. We have the technology now to actually develop this resource. So far, it's been mainly the United States that has done this, and look at the competitive energy advantage that the United States has today. But other countries will be able to adapt this, and all that is going to be taking place over the next 10 years and beyond. And the more quickly countries adopt this, particularly in terms of the natural gas, I think the better their overall economic performance will actually be. This is a key governance issue, obviously. Now, there are pollution concerns overall, but the production of natural gas in the United States has actually lowered U.S. pollution, whereas we've actually seen it increase in some European countries. Germany, for instance, which said no to any further nuclear reactors, which said has said so far no to shale operations, and going for the green economy, but they need backup power stations, and they've been relying on coal for that. There's a little bit of irony there, but I don't want to digress too much on that. But that's my fourth reason in believing that we will see this cheaper energy in real terms, meaning on an inflation-adjusted basis, is based primarily on that shale gas and oil. But it'll also occur because of more efficient uses of energy and the inroads that the government-subsidized so-called green forms of energy have actually taken, particularly solar. That's the one that's really attractive. The wind is far less effective and has serious drawbacks, as you know. But nevertheless, we are seeing these alternative forms of industry gain in acceptance and popularity and also gain in efficiency. And the technological rate of innovation, the accelerating technological rate of innovation, will help the green energy technologies as well. So we're going to have a combination. We have conventional oil. And remember all those stories about how we were going to run out of oil? Well, not at all. We're given the shale capacity, and it will last for the rest of this century at least. And so then we also have the green energies coming on stream, and I think that there will also be another generation of nuclear power as well. But first, they need to solve a number of problems, not least being the deal an effective way to deal with the waste disposal problem. And I'm not talking about dropping it in the sea or burying it in mountains. I'm talking about rendering it harmless in a short period of time so that you can grow flowers in it. Will they be able to do that? Of course they will. But we don't exactly know when. But again, this will be also as a consequence of the accelerating rate of technological innovation. And the humans are difficult, dangerous people at times, but also the inventive capacity is absolutely extraordinary. And if there's a need, well, on a needs must basis, then we see the creativity of that developmental process. And I have little doubt that I will see probably within, well, it would have to be within my lifetime, but a way to produce nuclear energy that is far, far safer than those plants that were mostly built in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. That's old nuclear. And lastly, the fifth plank in this supercycle bull market that I have referred to on a number of occasions is better corporate governance. Now, that goes in cycles. Corporate governance at the end of a period of valuation contraction is usually quite good. It improves throughout that period of valuation contraction. A lot of the nonsense, careless spending, that's all left behind. We get down to earth, the good solid overall economic policies and governance. And that's what we're actually seeing. It's in the latter stages of super cycle bull markets that we get all of the excesses, as we last saw, of course, in the 1990s. Okay. So that's an attractive overall outlook, I feel. I'm actually quite optimistic about it. And because it's also a minority view, I take some comfort in that at this stage. And the reason that not that many other people are talking about it is because a lot of money, not least pension money, is tied up in government bonds. And there are certainly some big risks there. And I've been over this before, but it's a point that really should be repeated, albeit briefly. We have seen the major government bond markets in a bull phase for over 31 years. Now, that phase, I think, would have ended earlier had it not been for the drama that we've seen in this decade, and well, now really in the last decade. I'm thinking of the crashes in 2000 and also the crash in 2008. Now, so we have globally overweight positions in this fixed interest sector, and you know, all credit to these people for participating in this huge, long bull market. But people tend to become complacent and feel that it's going to go on forever. I feel now, with interest rates as low as they actually are, interest yield rates as low as they are, with the vast increase in the supply of these government bonds, which are currently held up and benefiting from the tailwind of quantitative easing, as are stock markets, of course. But the main buying is occurring by the central banks, is occurring in the fixed interest sector. That creates the bubble and a very dangerous situation. And I was watching CNBC briefly this morning while I was in my home gym, and Wilbur Ross, who's certainly a wise old head in terms of markets, was talking about the dangers of this bond market bubble situation, and he said, he does his research, so I take his word on this. He said that even if we saw yields move back up to the levels that we were last seeing in the, really about 7, 8, 9 years ago, that that would equate to a 20 to 25% drop in the valuation of long-dated U.S. treasuries. So to be hanging around in this market waiting for QE to eventually end, I think is increasingly dangerous. And I think that what we will see is a drift away from those fixed interest markets by a good many investors. But there, I think that every super cycle bull market always causes a lot of casualties when it finally ends, and I expect that to be the case in long-dated government bond markets as well. I just hope that none of the Fuller Money subscribers are seriously affected by that change. So I would be cautious ahead of the change, because when everybody knows that the super cycle bull market in government bonds is over, it'll be too late. A lot of damage will have already occurred. And I think that will probably be a fairly lengthy bear market. Initially, it's beneficial for equities, but it all depends on how high interest rates actually go. And it's impossible to predict that at this stage overall. But needless to say, that having talked about a super cycle bull market in equities, these are punctuated by some bear markets. Think of 1987, for example. It only looks like a small blip on the charts. If you look at the long-term charts in the library, put up a 50-year chart, but pretty traumatic at the time. And we will get those, of course, from time to time. But my big theme point on that is that we are coming out of a very difficult phase for equities and moving closer to the next really very attractive phase. And you can see plenty of evidence of this potential on the price charts, particularly where some of these big companies that have just been ranging sideways seven, eight, nine, 10 years or more, with their valuations going down and their productivity steadily improving, and then they start to break up out of those big, big ranges. Okay, I'll leave a little bit of time here, not much, for commodities. What has clearly ended, for at least the short term, is the big fashion for speculative long positions in the commodity markets. And that's true of energy contracts, it's true of the precious metals, and it's pretty well the industrial commodities, pretty well across the boards. And I think that will probably be a medium-term trend. But I think there are basically fewer opportunities in the commodity markets right now, and that's likely to be the case for at least the medium term. And the precious metals have lost their overall uptrend consistency that we had seen for so many years. They've been in these current trading ranges for longer than we have seen in the past. I don't think that means that they're going to collapse in price. I view gold and its surrogates as hard money. And at a time when there's so much currency devaluation, so much printing of currencies. Currencies have never held their value, and the economic problems that we've seen over the last couple of decades will ensure that currencies will not really hold their value here going forward. And so that's the very long-term support beneath precious metals, but the scope for surges to the upside, well, they appear limited at the moment, and there are too many question marks in my opinion. Now, as far as agricultural commodities are concerned, prices are generally somewhat softer than we've seen for several years, which is a good development. And we hopefully will see less adverse weather conditions this year, and that would enable reserves of staple staple grains and beans to be increased globally, and that's an important factor overall. Remember, if I'm as I talk about this, remember something that I've often stressed over the years is that when commodities are surging higher, there'll always be some sort of fundamental catalyst behind that, and that will attract a lot of speculative to investment demand. When we see that, it really does leave stock markets vulnerable. And that last bubble in the commodity markets, for instance, as you will recall, was in late 2007 and early 2008, and you know how equities were affected by that. And last but not least, currencies. Well, I don't think there's a great deal to say here. I think we're probably going to see a somewhat quieter period for currencies overall. I think we will see a further devaluation of the Japanese yen. I expect, for instance, yen to be trading, let's quote it against the U.S. dollar, and it's currently at 94.45. I would expect this to be over 100 later on this year, as part of this economic policy, which is the right policy for Japan overall, as this continues. I didn't talk about Japan specifically because I have on so many occasions, but I do expect this to be a genuine bull market phase. In other words, I think it will exceed the rally that we saw in 2003, and that was a pretty good move. Overall, that was Koizumi and also replacing the head of the central bank. But I think this will be similar, but perhaps somewhat more aggressive policy. Also in currencies, what we have seen is a desire to by countries to keep their currencies comparatively soft. Will we have a stronger phase for the U.S. dollar over the longer term? Quite possibly, because of the USA's energy advantage. But I don't think that we're going to see that happen that much in the near term. What we will see a continuation of, though, is near to medium term, I should say. What we will see a continuation of, though, is retreat, safe haven buying in U.S. dollars when investors are worried about stock markets. And that's, of course, that happens periodically, and that will continue to be the case. So, for example, when QE is ending, don't be surprised if that causes strength in the U.S. dollar overall. But I think globally, for at least the next couple of years, we will see countries try to prevent any spikes in their currencies overall. On the very long term, it depends very much on what happens in terms of GDP growth, and that will be the big long-term driver of currencies, at least in terms of one against another. And on that note, folks, apologies if I've run on too long. It's now time for me to say have a fabulous weekend, and we'll have more on these interesting markets on Monday. All the best.